the Department of Agriculture as well as the public entity, which is CASIDRA, which is under the Department of Agriculture. Prior to that, this meeting we were briefed by both the Auditor General as well as the Audit Committee of both the Department and CASIDRA. The meeting was in committee, as you may see the report, it says issued under a lab until it has been reported to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. So therefore, the report is now open for public discussion and public opinion. And for purposes of that, this is also a public meeting. In other words, it is a meeting that is open to public as well. And members of the public are also allowed to attend the meeting. Those who ask, they want to ask questions, are allowed to ask questions. The meeting also was widely publicized in the three official languages of the Western Cape province. So it is a public meeting. Now, what we'll do for purposes of the record of the committee, I will allow the members of the provincial legislature to introduce themselves and of the committee. And then on this side, if the delegation is too big, Minister, we might not even remember the names. What we will request is that as the people are required to speak or respond, they may just introduce themselves and also introduce the position that they are holding. I am Lama Mvimbi, I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Public Account of the Province of the Western Cape. Next to me is Dustin David. He is the procedural officer of the Standing Committee.
Thank you, Chair. Andrikus van der Westhuizen, chairperson of the Standing Committee on Agriculture, Environmental Affairs and Development Planning. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Derek America. I'm a member of SCOPA. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Melika Akhako, member of SCOPA. Good afternoon, everyone. Pat Madam.
Good afternoon, my name is Nomi Kwela.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Now, honorable minister, I'm going to hand over to you. You will direct us regarding your delegation.
Thank you, chairperson of SCOPA, and thank you for the members of the committee to account before the Standing Committee of Public Accounts in terms of the annual report requirements for good corporate governance. We have the senior managers here, and as well as members of the board member and the board chair of the board of CASIDRA, and I'm also very happy to see members of the external audit committee. But I think in the interest of time, as per your resolution, I would only maybe prefer if we could just have the chairman of the board of CASIDRA and the CEO to just indicate their names, and then we can proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Ainsley Moos, and I'm the chairperson of the board of CASIDRA.
Good afternoon, chairperson and members of SCOPA. My name is Ashley Seymour. I'm the CEO of CASIDRA.
Chair, we also have the chairperson of the risk committee of the board, and maybe it's also good for him to introduce himself.
Good afternoon, my name is Esther Carlitz. I'm the chair of the audit and risk committee of CASIDRA.
Now, for purposes of dealing with the annual report, we will go to on the annual report. We'll start with the annual report of the department first. That we'll go to part C of the report. We'll deal with part C as well as part E of the report. We will deal with them together with the audit report, also informed and guided by the audit report that we are going to present it to by the audit committee. Now, the manner we'll deal with it then is that I will ask members of the committee, members of the provincial legislature who have questions. They can indicate. We'll first start with part C of the report. Can I have an indication, honorable members? Part C starts on page 159. Honorable Bartman.
Thank you, Chair. As indicated previously, I know I ask this each time, but on page 171, I would just like to be assured that for those particular meetings, that valid apologies have been submitted in part C. Thank you.
Are you not asking questions? Oh, you want questions for... Oh, okay. I thought maybe you will exhaust all your questions.
I've exhausted my questions for part C. If you would like, I can ask my questions for part E as well, or would you like...
No, let's first deal with part C first and finish. Any response on the issue that was raised?
Sorry, Chair, yes, I have. We have 4 minutes. And we also have an email process. You'll notice that they were acting people. They had a letter, and then they attended these meetings on behalf of the senior manager. So you'll notice we've split, especially here at Veterinary Services. You can also see at Agricultural Economics.
Thank you very much. Patsy, honorable members, honorable Gondo.
Thank you, Chair. My question one is on page 171. I take the table that is here is of MCO, which is the Risk Management Committee members on the table. And just wanted to understand whether is it normal practice to have the head of ministry as part of the Risk Management Committee, if that list serves that particular purpose. And then on page
we have looked at. And can I just say that you raised the issue of safety, crime, and evictions. It only landed in terms of one of our key priorities in this new year's planning. So this is also a link to very specific the mandate and the objectives of the department for the last year of the strategic plan. So if you look at that, it is very much linked to agricultural production. So this is noted, but it will probably change as we go into our key priorities, or the minister's key priorities for the next 5 years. And we have some of these issues because it's in our control. These are part of the environment, but it often falls within another department. And then to four cases, I'll ask for your vote to respond.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. My name is Floris Eisamer, I'm the CFO. Yes, the two cases are, the one is an alleged fraud, nepotism. And the work has not yet started. It has been referred to fraud risk management. And the, as of 30 September 2019, it was in progress and it came in terms of the internal tip of line. The second one was alleged electricity funding theft, not the electricity theft, but the electricity funding theft. And it's also work in progress. And was a departmental referral. It's also at fraud risk management at the moment. Chair, at this moment, we are not sure when they will conclude, but it is in progress at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Electric funding theft.
Chair, yes, we do have a little hamlet, I suppose we call it there, Valdraai, next to the department. There's about 101 houses, and we sell electricity, which we pay for. You know, it's a pay-as-you-go sort of electricity. Now, we have within our department, we at this moment, we believe there was some
bad.
Yeah, so when the people pay, you know, that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable America. No question. Honorable Van Vestin. Honorable Ma'ra. Honorable Kat.
Thank you. Mine would be on page 74 under the issue of conflict of interest. 174. The report only mentions how conflicts of interest will be managed in terms of corruption. It does not make mention whether there were conflicts of interest that took place or under the current year under review. So I just wanted to check if there are any issues of conflict of interest that maybe you might have forgotten, but you don't mention if there are none. Neither do you mention that they are there.
Chair, there are always allegations of conflict of interest, and each and every one of them are investigated as prescribed by, amongst others, DOTP and our Treasury. Some of them are on and some of them are off, but there were no cases found where the conflict of interest, shall we say, slipped through, so that there was any sort of benefit to anybody for the year under the discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next section, Part E. Financial information. Page 221. Any indication of honorable members? Honorable Fatma.
Thank you, Chair. Page 274 under note 6.2 investments and all. I just want to find out
the details behind these, please. Thank you.
Chair, well, details, it depends on what we mean with details. Names we don't have at the moment. The bursary debt are people that used to work with us, or that we did give bursaries to, but we had to write it off because we could not give them work, you know, that kind of thing. And the telephone debt written off is one case, and at this moment, it was, in other words, also an internal person. As far as I know, we could not find the person, you know, after this left. And the amount was too small, really, to perpetuate the search there.
To a certain degree, we are handicapped in terms of critical engagement because of the two matters that were raised by the AG, namely transfers and subsidies and irregular expenditure and interpretation of its representation in our reporting structure or in our business processes, for that matter. So, until that matter has been resolved, there's not further interrogation, yeah, for fear of, going into the merits of the case. But insofar as the department is concerned, and I've gone through the speaker chair bar for that, would have been a green tick instead of the red ticks. I reserve my question to Cassidra. Thank you.
Chair, I'll forfeit my time for Honourable Maran, who indicated this morning that I didn't allow it. Chair. To the Honourable Maran.
No, Chair, actually wants to concur with because the meeting that we had prior, basically, Chair advised us not to deal with certain matters until the court case has been concluded. We have heard earlier on that the case will be heard February next year, I think. So it makes it a bit difficult, Chair, because we don't want to overstep, because sub judice, Chair, that person, you don't like. So I will also forfeit my opportunity to
Thank you, Chair. Since I was referred to, I feel that I may respond to that matter. Given that the AG and Audit Committee has indicated that goods and services, transfers and payments and linked to irregular payments are sub judice, my suggestion is that we then deal with notes 1, 2, 3, skip note 4, which is goods and services. Then we go on from note 5 up until note 6, skip note 7, which is transfers and subsidies. Go on with note 8. And go all the way up until note 20. 23, skip note 24, which is an irregular expenditure, go on from note 25 up until the end. The reason I make that suggestion is, given that those notes are from Judica, I see no reason why the committee can't question and do oversight on the other notes and reserve our questions and comments or oversight role until the court's judgment has made a judgment, and then we call the department and the committee back after that and say, okay, now that we have an answer legally on this matter, let us ask our questions on these particular notes. That is my suggestion, Chairperson.
Chair, may I perhaps I should be happy with this one, because then you need to kind of tiptoe around us, but I don't think you should that totally. Goods and services as they are here actually are not in dispute. It's what's not there that is in dispute. So the goods and services part, you are more than welcome to at least ask a question. Thank you, Chair.
Just as a general question which I've asked even the AG, maybe CFO and HOD, and maybe even the minister can answer. We've got a qualified audit and in the context of the Western Cape, our famed minister, it's kind of tough. Most of the department we've dealt with are different. Now, the issue is, to me, it's a financial issue, accounting issue. Now, I was saying to the members of the audit committee that when you are sick, when you sick, you go to the doctor. You don't go to the mechanic and say, mechanic, I'm sick. Now, the issue is a financial issue. It's not a legal issue. Why did it have to go to court?
Okay, Chair, let me respond. Accounting is the outcome, but our business model is the input. So you account according to how transactions work out. Accounting, in other words, us as accountants say, we actually write up the history. We do not make the history. Now, that is the reason why. So it is by implication. So what I'm trying to say is, should we not be successful, we will have to actually change our business model. And then the accounting can come around. So that is where we are, and I think that is where the AG and us had agreed to disagree. So why did we go to court? Unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, I'm not sure, but unfortunately they are a Chapter 9 institution in terms of the Constitution. So the AG, if you disagree with them, they do not have to give way. I mean, they can just stand. And the only way, it's like the public protector. The only way you can change them is, unfortunately, to go to court. So you need to be really sure that you are really in good disagreement before you do that, because only the court can tell them to do different. So that is why it became a legal matter, but you're right, it is an accounting answer. Chair, I think that's the best I could do. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I want to maybe upfront thank the committee's appreciation for the sub judice room, but the sub judice room must never be used as an escape clause to be held accountable. So I think what we have brought here is also our legal advisor, Mr. Bossoff, and I would refer to him that he can also just brief the committee on, because you ask, is this a legal issue or is it an accounting financial issue? And I think maybe it is both. Part of this is one of the principles, Chair, is of good governance, is predictability. And I think because there is now not legal clarity on the accounting standards and the who sets those standards, and it's quite interesting to note that the National Treasury has also not opposed our affidavit that we submitted to court. But I think, Mr. Bossoff, I would prefer if you could just give us a summary to let the committee at least have also our view without going into the merits of the case, so that we stick within the boundaries of natural justice. But I do think what is important, this is not a matter of who wins or who loses the case. Even if we lose the case, that would be great for us, because then we have legal clarity. If the Auditor General is wrong in the court case, we're not going to jump out and say we won. We say there is legal clarity in this matter. And once there is legal clarity, these things that the CFO has spoken about will then kick into place. Because this is not a case that is just applicable to the Western Cape. This is a case that's going to set the precedent for the rest of the country. And we also know where this particular matter originated through the AG. It happened as a result of the case of the dairy farm Frieda in the Free State. That was the originator that kick-started this. And so I think for all of us, it will bring legal clarity, it will bring financial clarity, and I think it is maybe good in this context to ask also to give us some broader explanation. And the reference has nothing to do with the chairperson of the Agriculture Standing Committee has referred to earlier. It has no relevance, Honourable Member. Thank you, Chair.
Just before we ask questions, just give the legal advice.
Yep, thank you, Chair. Nico Bosop, Director of Legal Advisory Services in the Office of the Premier. I think there are two distinct aspects which has led to this thing ending up before the courts. I think the one is that we just simply ran out of options with the AG. There was a very long history of trying to resolve the issue and the difference of opinion, and in the interest of obtaining certainty and a measure of, you know, to enforce a measure of dispute resolution, it was decided to approach the courts. The other is that underlying the dispute, there is a critical legal argument about the actual standards that are being applied, not only the interpretation of those standards, but also the actual lawfulness of those standards, and that will have, you know, vast, quite a far-reaching consequences countrywide for the AG and how audits and reporting is approached. So, yeah, I mean, Minister's touched on most of it, but the long and short of it is that, you know, in the absence of a proper dispute resolution mechanism internally to Treasury, and, you know, given that it's a Chapter 9 institution, internally to them, or to which everybody can agree to, there is very little else that the department could do than go to court. It's definitely not litigation driven through acrimony or seeking to destroy the AG or anything. It's literally a case of we need an answer, we need finality, whichever that may be. So, yeah.
Honourable Khaya. Yeah, thanks, Chair. No, mine is to understand in terms of the avenues that were followed before maybe the court. Just for clarity purposes, so that we know that seeking the court way forward would be the last resort. I wanted to check now, because you said that there were dispute resolutions that were followed, but not being clear that what did you follow, so that we would understand why you ended up in court. Because we don't want a situation whereby we know in the Western Cape, when anything has got to do with national, it's quick to go to make a typical example. The Western Cape wanted soldiers to come to Western Cape, and when they finally came, then they went to court. about such kind of thing, or they're intimidated about going to court. So the tug of war that is normally played between national and province, if it's not like that. Because we don't want a situation whereby you are prioritizing politics more than compliance and service delivery. We don't know whether you're flexing your muscles or what is going on.
Let's give Mr. Bruce then. We'll come to the series.
Thank you, Chair. I think just, it has a quite a long history. I mean, it started with most of these. It started with the COMAF process, and that was raised to and fro on the management reports. And eventually, we were approached for legal advice on this, and we expressed a view, and we obtained senior counsel's view on this, and that was shared with the AG. And there was the difference of opinion remained, and that was then eventually elevated through internal workings to NT, and views were expressed off record, and it just became apparent that NT wasn't going to directly resolve the issue, and it culminated in a roundtable with the AG National and the National Account Board, then Acting Accountant General at national level, in a large attempt to resolve the issue. And it became apparent that the fundamental, it's a difference of interpretation of standards. It wasn't a difference in the agreement about how the business model is approached or anything like that. It was a matter of an accounting interpretation, and it became clear that that was just not going to be resolved. And on advice of senior counsel, we approached it, we approached the court for essentially a declaratory order to make a finding and to say the way we read it is correct, or the way the AG is reading it is correct. And so I don't want to go into the merits too much, but there is a subtle underlying issue that is quite critical, relating to the actual nature of the standards being relied on. We're of the view that only a court can really decide that.
CFO?
Chair, I think I've covered on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable America?
This is unrelated, Chair. My favorite contingent liabilities. on page 280. guarantees 3,690,000 rand, etc. And it refers us to an extra 3A, and it lists the Eskom Holdings security of account. So that's understood. But it's 280. Now, two questions I'd like to ask, Chair. One being, is that there's this pending litigation, litigation, for lack of a better word, matter that needs to be resolved in the courts. It could go either way in terms of the interpretation. None of the Eskom under goods and transfers and illegal expenditure, and as was stated earlier, it can go either way. Now, I don't see there's any sort of provision, or maybe I have just not seen it, for costs that the court will award costs to either party, either to yourself or to the opposing party. There's no contingent liability for possible costs that may be incurred, neither is there provision for contingent assets should cost be awarded to the department. That's the one question, and maybe clarity. And second question, Chair, is that this money that was transferred from the department to Cathedra. Cathedra received revenue from the department of over 29 million rand. I can't pick it up anyway. Maybe I can just be directed as to where is the outflow from your accounts that flows to Cathedra and they captured within their accounts as they've been received from Mary Parker. And maybe I just missed it somewhere. It's probably just somewhere. Maybe I can just be directed to that.
Okay, Chair, let me start with the contingent that Eskom wants is just for us to get a tariff reduction. We had to arrange a bank guarantee. So that is all it is. Now, okay, the transfers to Cathedra, we will see a transfer and subsidies. That is note 7, page 275. That one which says public corporations and private enterprises, it also refers to annexes 1C. That is the Cathedra transfers. Now, Cathedra transfers, there are two, let's call it main transfers. The first one goes with the shareholders compact. That is where we give them what we call their core funding. In other words, that's for them to pay for their lights and their salaries and those kind of things. And that is around the 29 million that you referred to. The rest are either disaster funds or settling of new farmers and land care and EPWP, which will be part of that 475 million right now. That 475 million, if you compare to the previous year, the comparative, you will see it's rather high. And that is because at adjusted estimate time in last year, that is now in December / January, we did receive in the adjusted estimate as a department 271 million towards drought and fires, which we transferred. So that is sort of a once-off, let's call it lump. But that is where all the funding is lying in terms of transferring them to Cathedra. Thank you, Chair.
Just one follow-up, Chair. Thank you, sir. On page 287, is non-adjusting events after reporting date. The Minister of Finance had issued a letter of guarantee or letter of credit. It serves as a guarantee for an order to international company for the supply, delivery, and commissioning of a plot officer to the department. Can you just tell me more about that and where does it fit in? Who ultimately is responsible for that grant?
Yes, Jay. Okay. Actually, that plot officer landed this weekend, we are glad to say. It's a small thing for a lot of money. But that is for the research funds. Now, we all, the only place that could give it to us is an institution in Germany. And they either wanted money up front or letter of credit. Obviously, the government decided, specifically with our treasury, you really do not like paying up front. So the other option was the one to give. So in other words, now that the thing is landed, we will obviously pay on our accounts for the plot harvester, and the letter of credit will be nullified or honored for that. Thank you, Jim.
I continue with questions on the notes. Yes, thank you, Jim. Chair, can I just ask, in terms of the NARISEC program, I see that you state in the notes that the department is the implementing agent, but that you haven't received any money from the national department for that program. And does it mean that it has come to a standstill? My next question is on page 284. It seems to me as if the amount that you had to write off for house rent, and I happen to know a little bit about file drive, primary, and I presume that the largest portion of this may relate to those settlements. But why would you say you required to increase the amount that you had to write off so significantly in terms of the amount. And then, Chair, the last one for me is on page 295. There under, there's a sentence that is in italics where you said that you included in employee benefits an amount of 57,000 in respect of a provision made for an exit gratuity for the minister not disclosed in 2017-2018. It seems to me some of our colleagues have got benefits that we do not know of, or that we're not aware of. So if you could just tell us about that exit gratuity and you know, is that in terms of the ministerial handbook? Where does that amount come from? Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Okay, the principal agent, yes, we are. Okay, now that department is now part of the National Department of Agriculture. They joined, but we were doing work for them. We had 22,000 rand there. That is the one on the principal agent part in note 32. If we get to the house rent provision, Chair, we use the state attorney to try and get our debt, outstanding debt, to try help, and now we are, I must admit, not very successful. So we had, you know, in other words, we quite often just get into this called for yard, you know, that. So we do not get much joy. So in the end, and in the meantime, the rent was, the house rent was actually transferred to Transport to Public Works. So kind of a problem ended. However, we still have debt, and we try and recover as far as we can, using the state attorney as we should, but not with much success, you know. In other words, no forwarding address and all those kind of interesting things that they give us. So we increased our provision basically in the end to do it because of what feedback we get from the state attorney. And sorry, your last question.
Last one was on a gratuity that you provided.
Oh yes, no, that is normal. That is normal in terms of the ministerial handbook that we got from our CSC, you know, Corporate Service Centre, to pay it. I think it was on Minister Windy still. Well, now Premier Windy, because we were in between ministers towards the end of the term. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe if the department can just confirm this date of the court date. And just give us what is the right date of that court.
Chair, it's the 6th of February 2020, next year.
Thank you. Chair, and I'm sure we can always have conversation because I didn't want to get into the trap of that minister started for us to venture into this matter. So I would rather wait at that point and then we start, you know, giving opinions on the matter. Let me take that guidance as us members to try and ask particular questions, and I'll be guided if I'm discussing in notes that are not relevant. And I'm going to start from the back, Chair. On page 298, if the department can just indicate as part of, I think, is it under 1C, what gave rise to almost this increase, if I'm reading it appropriately, of the transfer to Cassidra from 2017-18 of 259 to 475. And again, on both the private enterprises, Hotgrow and Olive Handmade Soup, if we can just get a sense what type of a relationship is there? Is it just donor? Is it sponsorship? You know, if maybe one can get more information around these two transfers, the chair. And then moving further to page, page 286. In 286, Chair, I see there under related party transaction, and I think it's just a matter of governance that I would like to be educated on. I see Cassidra, whilst reporting through the department's account here, the total shareholding of Cassidra is under the Provincial Minister of Economic Opportunities. If maybe you can clarify that governance issue, because I would have thought that Cassidra is under the Department of Agriculture. So if not, if you can just clarify that particular issue, and at what point does this particular Department of Economic Opportunities interface with this particular entity that is supposedly under its oversight? And then moving, Chair, from that, on 284 to 285, from 24, you know, around 24 to 25.1, if also more information can be clarified on this irregular expenditure. Because if I look at it, especially if one looks at 24.2 on the details, it's not abiding to cost containment measures, you know, I mean, and others, catering cost, contract management, which actually results to almost 248. What has been the process, you know, to investigate this, and where is that process, including detail about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is reported here, Chair. And then moving quickly from here to 274. In 274, under 6.2 debts written off, I think both on the nature of debts, recoverable revenue written off, and other debts written off. Can I just check, does this mean a saving back into the department if one looks at these amounts, or what does it mean? So please just explain that to me, including 6.3, the theft of computer and other equipment that resulted in 116. Was that a loss? Has that been recouped in what way, if so? And then on page 252, Chair, if an explanation on what exactly were these costs under 8.2 of social facilitation for COE. Did you have to, on this particular financial year, I can see that you I'm assuming you had employed new people from your cost of employees of 259 the previous financial year to 697 as your actual expenditure. What exactly are these new employees or jobs that you know amounted to this under the social 8.2 program, social facilitation? And then my last one, Chair, is on page 229. On page 229, when one considers actually this financial information, one can see that there was quite a spike of expenditure on catering, on entertainment, on transport and venues and facilities. Perhaps in absence of context, the department can indicate what resulted to the spike on this particular costs. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Chair, if I may start where you stopped, in other words, 229. The spike in catering and entertainment specifically was part of the female entrepreneur and farm worker the competition that we actually did in the department, as opposed to previous years, it was done through Casidra. So that was like, and it will remain there because the expenditure and the now remains within the department. So that was the increase there. If I go to 252, please get there. 8.2 social facilitation, Mr. Jacobs and also Mr. Aris can tell us what the social facilitation people do, because that's actually with them. So if I can just add that to them after I'm done. Page 274. And if I do skip something, please tell me about it. I'm trying my best here. 274 is... That is not revenue, that is expenditure. In other words, somebody outstanding leave without pay, for instance, is somebody that left us, but has taken their leave, but they actually did not earn it yet. In other words, they resigned. Remember, your leave is divided up in the 12 months. So somebody took 10 days more because they had it within their total, but then they resigned before the end of that year, and then they actually had to pay it back, and once again you can't find them, and then you have to pay it off. So unfortunately, no, it's not an income. Chair, then I'm at 284.85, the irregular. Okay, you were specifically referring to the cost containment. It was the one where they exceeded. Let me just get that one quickly. Regular prior years. Catering, it was exceeding the catering limit. I'm not sure. Okay, number one, each and every one of these irregular cases are actually individually investigated to get to a finding, because the prescript is also what are you doing in terms of disciplinary, you know, should that be necessary. So each one of them has a report. Now, what happened in this year specifically, the prescripts changed twice, and which left the department with quite a challenge to just work through them. So we are at this moment working through them. And we actually have to report our irregular to the audit committee at every meeting, because that's a standing condition with them now. So yes, there is progress, and this would be caught up. But the point I want to make, I think, is just if there is irregular could not have been foreseen, etc., after investigation, the necessary steps are taken. If we need to claim back funding, money, we all also do that. Also on the fruitless and wasteful, and where disciplinary is needed to be done, it's also done. And obviously, then you also check your controls to see if you need to improve on that. Chair, then we are at 296. Page 296, you were asking, I think, for the spike in the CASP, if I remember correctly, and that would have been the drought funding down at the 70 million that we did get in the adjusted estimate. In other words, in the middle of the year, we did get that, so that would be the spike there. 286, did I miss that? Okay. Let me just get back to 286 as well. Okay. 286. Oh yes. Cassidra is a Schedule 3D in terms of the PFMA. That means they are a provincial business enterprise. They are not under the control of the department, as opposed to, for instance, Westgrove, which would be falling under DDAC. They report, actually they have their own board, which also does is their accounting authority, who reports directly to the minister. Now at this moment it's the Minister of Agriculture, but last year when this was applied, it was still then Minister Windy, he was the Minister of Economic Opportunities. So in next year's report it will say reporting to the Minister of Agriculture. Chair, then I just need to get back to 298. And once again, I think that the spike that was, I heard about the spike here as well, and that is that 170 mil plus a couple of others that was also from the adjusted estimate that was transferred to Cassidra for drought, for land care, and for the fires we did ourselves. Chair, I think that was about it. If I missed anything, please do point me in that direction again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Darrell Jacobs, DDG. Just with regards to the position of social facilitation, the increase in COE is because of the appointment of a middle manager in that particular area. And then the functions of what is covered by social facilitation, if I'm allowed to direct you, member, to through the chair to pages 142 and 143, outlines in great detail everything that the social facilitation unit actually covers. So it's in terms of the community representative forums in prioritized rural areas, the number of projects implemented in rural areas, and in terms of CRPP sites, and the number of rural youth interventions facilitated. So that's the kind of projects that the social facilitation unit actually rolls out. Thank you, Chair.
I just saw one thing that I did miss, and that was the question on Hortgrow and olive handmade soaps. Hortgrow is they are the working arm of the Deciduous Fruit Producers Trust, and that was just a transfer to them. And Olive Handmade Soaps is one of the new customers, if I remember, of is it a view? Giswa. It's up and coming. They make soap of, I think it was something like rooibos tea, perhaps Giswa can expand on that, which we gave a donation to, you know, towards what she's doing there.
Thank you, Chair. The Olive Handmade Soaps is actually one of the SMMEs that are actually based in Woodstock. They had a once-off opportunity to attend trainings overseas, which doesn't actually take place quite often, and they desperately needed to go there because it was actually part of their expansion plan, and they requested a donation from the department. And we thought, you know, from an enabling, you know, point of view, it will really make a huge difference if we actually, you know, give them that donation they requested. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, I'll try to speak much slower. We appointed a middle manager within that sub-program, and so the increase in COE is because of the appointment of that middle manager. Okay. And the functions, as I said, in terms of what that person is going to be doing, is is covered in pages 142 to 143.
Okay. But the function is not in question. I think what I wanted to understand is the cost. So the function is not in question. I wanted to understand what increased the cost. So you're saying that difference is the difference of a middle manager salary. This is what I wanted to ascertain. And then I think I just wanted to make a comment on this issue of irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful, because if one looks at it, especially the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, accepting the response that was given, that actually the fruitless and wasteful has increased from the previous financial year to currently. And I'm not sure what does this take us in terms of internal controls. Because this is one issue I think we were discussing in the earlier conversation with the audit committee and the AG, is the extent to which one assumes internal controls tries to ensure that we avoid or reduce, you know, these kinds of occurrences. And as such, one would like to see, when you read the reports, that there are still these kind of issues that we're still struggling with. So I think for me, it was just that comment. I hear the matter that the issues are being discussed and that's going to be reported. The fact of the matter that they are here, and it gives a particular indication in terms of the working within this particular function. So I think, Chair, those would be my two cents comment without belaboring the point. Thanks.
Honourable members, I saw the name and the hand of Honourable Maran and Honourable America. Is there any other honourable member who would like to speak other than those, because we still have to look at the report of CASIDRA? Honourable Maran.
Chair, thanks. Just two issues. Page 272, prevalent substance and the amount of 1.8 million that was spent, and we see it was students, foreign guests, and small over the farmers. Chair, I just want to check, Chair, if it's not now, it's fine. Whether we can receive more information, Chair, on the 1.8 million. Was it one trip? Was it two trips? Was it three trips? If it was more than one, how many students, how many small, older farmers? And Chair, was it specific programs that they have attended overseas and how they have benefited us? Them, Chair, and also how they have benefited us? Chair, we would like to understand that. Then, Chair, on page 258, the recoverable revenue and recoverable amounts off and off. Chair, I would like to understand, at what point do we say it's irrecoverable? At what point? And is there a process to recover money? Is there a process, attempts to recover money? And at the end of that process, if we have not recovered, when do we decide that it is irrecoverable, Chair? And we would also like to, Chair, have more detail in terms of whose debt was up and off. Is it one person? Is it more than one? Is it more than one business and so forth? Just to get more information in terms of that, Chair. Thanks.
Chair, can I respond to that? Actually, it's probably more than five trips. And what I want to propose is that we give you the travel report that each group has to do. And the students, we have an agreement with Cornell University. We take our master students and young men.
foreign guest is where we see there's expertise that we require, then we would do. We would often, for our extension symposium, invite people to talk to, you know, about 150 of our staff members. And then the small holders is actually Mungizwa, take them to market. So we go to Berlin, we go to China, wherever there's opportunities also for businesses to look at foreign markets. And then the other is we also take agri workers or farm workers. We take to Burgundy as part of our international exchange, as well as some of our staff to go and do project management, as well as, well, this year we're going to start again with cheesemakers to take that, because I think it's important. So it's a collective, but what we will do is look at that amount and give you the reports, because with it is also the application, and you can see the process, but also the benefit. So if you don't mind, it's going to be probably 5 or 6, but I think it will give you the detail of who's gone as well. Thank you.
Chair, then perhaps just on the write-offs, there is a process where you do a send a letter of demand 3 times, then we hand over to the state attorney, and then we do not write off until they recommend. And that is where our problem is, because mostly they recommend it. We always get the feeling they really do not push much. But yes, there is a process, there's a standard operating procedure actually to do. So, in other words, the decision to write off is actually made by the state attorney. In the end.
Honorable America.
Hello, do you follow?
Yes. Chair, thanks.
We were told the next meeting is, our next meeting is tomorrow, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, Chair, mine is on Thursday, 8 o'clock. Chair, just on the, yes, I have said earlier on that if the information is not now available, we can get it at a later stage, Chair. Just on the students, Chair, and also, if we don't at later stage, whether the department, especially when it comes to students, whether we follow students when they have completed their studies, whether we follow them to make sure that they are absorbed in the specific field that they have studied in, or I at some stage, Chair, we must get a report in terms of that, students. Also, Chair, the state attorney, besides, so there's a process that's been followed, and the state attorney cost money. I'm asking.
Chair, yes, the state attorney does cost money, but, well, no buts, yes, it does.
Yes, no, I'm asking, Chair, and whether it's us as a department that pays the state attorney. Now, if the amount, Chair, is, for instance, 5,000 rand, and the amount is lesser than what we will pay the state attorney, do we still follow through with that process?
Obviously, Chair, we look at the outstanding amount. You first assess it for is it worthwhile, and the cost that you might incur, etc. So now we do not nilly willy just send anything. If somebody owes us 150, 200 rand, whatever, then we quite often stop at the point. If our third letter comes back, you know. Return to sender, you know, those kind of things, then we make that decision. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Chair. I know the question I'm going to ask relates to transfers and subsidies, but it doesn't go to the merits of the matter. Just that there are a number of non-profit organizations that benefit from transfers and it's an lecture 1D on page 299. I've got the 47 million and whatever is transferred to non-profit organizations. I just want some information. Do people, these organizations, do they apply for funding and you assess the, does it fit in where you want to develop this organization in alignment with the objectives of your department and the Western Cape's economy and, you know. Okay. So that's one question. Maybe I should just... Okay.
Chair, unfortunately, we need to detail it in terms of the heading statement of transfers to non-profit institutions. Now, that's not necessarily donations. That's the first thing I need to say. If we talk about the Resilience Food Producers Trust, they actually do projects. But because the trust is falls under, in terms of our SCOA prescripts, falls under non-profit institutions, it lies here. So they actually do work for that. That is the role. If you look at LORVA, Low Olifants River Irrigation Scheme, that is where it is supported by our program too, where they actually do maintenance work and try to do preventative maintenance work on the canal that runs from the Olifants River. So unfortunately, this does leave, I nearly want to say a funny trail, but unfortunately we do have to list them in accordance to what kind of institution they are. Then you can go, Vita, for instance, if you go up onto the next page, and Wines of South Africa, those are people that do marketing, etc. So, yeah. And Sustainable Caesar is the same than Vita. They also do that. So unfortunately, the small numbers, I nearly want to say the numbers 100 and under, those will be numbers that might be donations. But the bigger numbers is definitely, it's not for free. Thank you, Chair.
Just a last question, Chair. In terms of the investment of 25 million rand to Casidra, can you just tell me more about that investment? Because it doesn't, that now doesn't reflect in Casidra's accounts and that.
Chair, if I may, now I need to start in 1992, but I'll try and be quick. Casidra was created before the PFMA. Then they were LANO. And the only way, and they were created by the National Department of Human Settlements at the time, I think they called themselves Housing Center. And the only way they could get money into Casidra is taking out shares of 25 million so that Casidra can have some funding. So that, when they were transferred to us, we just got it with the shares. And that is why you won't find it there. Thank you, Chair.
A general question, HOD and maybe CFO. In the Auditor General's report, one of the issues on page 6, the issue of BEE Act. I just want to find out how compliant is the department in terms of that act. Triple BEE Act.
Chair, I think like all the rest of the province at this moment, we do not have a BEE rating at this moment. So in other words, we are not compliant. However, we're working at it. It might come at a cost.
It says here, this requirement was audited for the 2018-2019 financial year.
Yeah, it does, and there was a finding because we did not comply, if I remember correctly. The AG disagreed.
Non-compliant.
Why not? Chair, okay, that is it's sort of an interprovincial thing. We were going to do as a government going to go through this. However, there was an oversight because nobody actually saw the 13G except for the Auditor General. And I think it was totally, and I don't have a better answer, Chair, we didn't know. on the 13G, but we made very sure that we actually submitted our annual report this year on time to not have the similar finding. And that's the best answer I have, Chair. It was an oversight of something that we did not really know that was there. Thanks, Chair.
That's sad, Chair. I'm sorry.
I thought I was the last person. I thought I was the last person. Am I provoking you?
Sorry, yes, you do. This is a generic sort of finding in all the AG reports, you know, and it is not specifically isolating a department. They merely flag it as a possible risk for the future. So it is not a specific finding against a particular department, it's generic across departments.
Honorable Bartma.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out, is it true that the non-compliance is due to some certificates that you have to supply in terms of triple BEE? And if so, and it's something I've brought up in previous scopes with other departments as well, how much would it cost for the department to comply with that particular certificate? Because one of the questions I've previously asked is, we audit annual reports. So the Auditor General goes through this information, goes through the documents, takes a sample and says whether or not they agree with it. Then my question was, okay, so in terms of triple BEE, why can't they, in terms of a sample, do the same? And one of the responses I received was that the triple BEE certification is more comprehensive as they look as to everything. And it's not necessarily a finding on the statistics that you've presented, but it's regarding the compliance certificate. I just wanted to find out if that is correct in this department as well. And if so, how much would it cost to comply with that certificate?
Chair, the rest of it is right. The cost can be significant. However, we need to do a lot of homework, if I can say that, as a department, because specifically on your supply chain side, you need to have a lot of statistics which you can prove. So at this moment, we are busy with our homework, because the unfortunate part is if you get somebody to do that audit to give you your compliance certificate, whether you're now level 1, 2, 3, or whatever the case may be, they can walk in and you've not done enough work, and they send you an account and say, we can't make a finding because we can't give you a certificate because this is missing. So at this very moment, with a conscience of what the cost may be, we want to make damn sure, Chair, if you will permit me that word, that we can at least have something proper there to present, so that if we do pay it, I mean, the fact that we must have means that we need to find the money, like we need to find the money to pay the Auditor General. We need to find the money, so in the end that I nearly want to say it becomes irrelevant because it's law. So that is the best answer I have at this moment, Chair. Actually, it's the only answer I have. Thank you, Chair.
No, Honourable Gold, I see now Honourable Clerk also.
best answer indeed, Sefo. Actually, I had thought Member America is actually extreme since. Chair, in page 287, I just wanted to understand, I see the relationship here with MD Agriculture Research Trust.
Which page?
287. MD Agriculture Research Trust. Can I just get more, a better understanding? Is this a government entity? Is it an NPO? And if so, how long has this arrangement been there? Because I see that in terms of the agreement, the department also uses the trust and all the other things that are mentioned there in that paragraph. If you can give us just a bit of detail of who is this trust and how long has been the arrangement with the trust itself in terms of the function articulated here. and then my last one, Chair, and this, I promise this is my last one. It's on the underspending, because I can see that there's a lot of rollover in terms of the underspending, and perhaps we can just get some clarity of what are the challenges that result into this underspending of funds. And what I know that there's a treasury regulations around rollovers, and just want to understand that the extent to which the department tries to manage, you know, and administer spending, so that if we ask for money, we spend the money instead of spending not having the money, not spend it and roll it over, and then tomorrow we say we're not receiving money. Perhaps if I can just get in some context to the cases of underspending that are reported, I think under from page 253 to 254 on some of the programs. Thank you. Department?
Chair, okay. The trust. Chair, this is a dark story with the history, and that was March in 96. In 1996, when agriculture actually became concurrent institution, with what we also came to the provinces, there was, and that was before my time, Jay, but that's just how I picked it up, there was the division of funding towards all these departments. And this department was supposed to get something like 86 million rand, and in the end they got something like 48 million rand as a start at the time. So they actually had to close their research because they just didn't know, they just did not have funding. And then the farmers in the Western Cape actually got together and they created a trust, this one. They provided animals, they provided in some sense fodder for those animals, and this trust is still running strong. Dr. Trautman can elaborate on that, but they give us in kind up to 10 million rand a year. Half of the animals we actually do research on, at least half, are actually trust animals, which don't cost us a thing. So, and they are not a government institution of any sort. Well, as a legal entity, they are a trust. And it's always the farmers and Agri West Cape and those people that will be the trustees. So we are actually a benefactor of this trust, but that was the origin of it, Chair. Chair, as the other one was underspending. Chair, that is deliberate. Except for the money we had to roll over for the porridge gate, the Golden Gate. That was because that was cast funding, we could not move that. The rest is actually, although you end at the on 31 March, there are still outstanding accounts to be paid. And that is the kind of money, I mean, you need to do business up and until the very last day. So there are accounts to be paid in the next year which you need the money for. So we work around 1% of our budget. Towards which we use that. So there's no underspending. We actually need that to pay our accounts. So that is it's a calculation rather than an underspending, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Clerk.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm partly covered by Honorable Nkondla. Mine is also on page 253. And the last program, I just want to understand if the small post plot harvest, if indeed it was realized, because I think it was supposed to have been imported from Germany. Yeah, no, I just want to get an update as far as that, because it might happen that by now, you must check these reports they have prepared around about
March. So maybe by now you might be able to give us a progress report. And then the last one is that of the BBBA. The BBBA. Yes, I hear the justifications and everything. And we note that in most departments indeed there is non-compliance. But now what I want to understand, since you have set a precedence of things maybe you do not agree on in terms of, because there's non-compliance there, if you might end up in court as well, as far as that is concerned, or you will abide and then by next year you will give us a compliance in that regard. Because I can see there is justification and even advocacy from this side as to why you are not compliant.
Chair, thank you. The plant harvester, I actually have a photo here. It was delivered this weekend. I actually saw it, so we're very glad.
The
plot harvester, that is a research. The research people do it. It seems to me they can harvest something that's as small as this floor with it, because it's a lot of money for very little machinery. But that's the one, the triple BE compliance. Chair, on a serious note, we do not go willy-nilly to court. This is something we need to do because it's law, and that is why we will do it. It will take a lot of work, and I'm not, and I don't say we will make it easy, but I mean that is that's the way we do things. Thank you, Chair.
Then there's no further question on this, because I thought when I raised the issue of BBBE, I was the last person. I didn't know that I was provoking more questions. But on a serious note, you know, when you give an honest and a genuine answer, it to a certain extent disarm you, or it resolves the problem to a certain extent, because this BBBE, it's a consistent finding that is being made by the AG to almost all the departments we've seen so far, and we asked them about it. Now it's interesting that I have varying answers. I remember one of the first department when we asked them, they said, no, we're compliant, we're fully compliant, but this. And we met with others. Others were open and said, no, we're not compliant because of this and that. Now, part of the reason is put there, and maybe it's one of the issues that the Auditor General flags, is to try and address the imbalances of the past. Simple. Just to address the imbalances of the past. And now, in order to do that, they made it law, because the legacy of the past was legalized. So it was artificial. So in order to change the imbalances of the past, we use laws. So we'll always, as long as it's here, we are going to ask about to how far the department it is. Now, part of the reason we ask it is because I think most of us are serious about it. We'd like to see the imbalances of the past being addressed and then by actually complying with the law. So we still got another long time together, 5 years. Next year, if it's come, we are going to ask it again as to, last year you said this is what is going to happen. So we just want a cooperation. So far, the response is positive from most of the department. There is no resistance towards it. Most department, they do commit that they would like to comply with it. So we will always be reminding the department every time they come in front of us. Now, if we go to Cathedra, finish the department. There are no questions, and now the next part is Cathedra. Because I see members look as if I've done something wrong.
No. It's fine. We're fine. We are together. We are one. We're together. So it's fine. Now, obviously, what we do, we will also deal with it the same way we deal with the department. They've also got parts, so we're going to deal with part C as well as part E of the report. We will be dealing with it together with the Auditor General and the Audit Committee report that is in front of us.
Chairperson, given the advice that chiroprax normally give to members of parliament, that it is not advisable to sit longer than 2 hours, may I ask you for a 5-minute comfort break so that we can listen to chiroprax?
It's a very progressive proposal, Minister. That will be good. That's 5 minutes. Yeah.
Is there any plans by CASETO to change this particular thing? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, for those questions. Chair, I'll respond to the first question on the board evaluation, as well as the third question on gender equity, and then ask my colleagues, the CEO and perhaps also the CFO, just to add. So just in terms of the board evaluation, Chair, we do a thorough board evaluation. We actually do a self-evaluation, that is every year, and we mandate the vice chairperson of the board to actually run with the process. And we do that not making use of any external service providers to actually ensure that all of the individual board members are comfortable with the level of discussion and debate that is happening at the board level. So I'm not sure, Chair, if I've addressed that particular question sufficiently for the member. I'm happy to add more if required.
She'll come back if she's satisfied.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of that was raised by the Honourable Member, as far as the comment that management is in the process of improvements to internal control, as well as the acknowledgement that there are proper internal controls, I can confirm, Chair, that there are proper internal controls, as we do in the report. And so we are saying that post the AG's findings, there's most certainly a need to improve. And so hence we are acknowledging that post the AG's findings, we have begun a process of addressing those concerns to afford and allow for further improvements, Chairperson.
Chair, then just in terms of the third question, which was in terms of gender equity, I can assure the member that the Board of Kusidra takes it very seriously. In fact, my predecessor chair was female. Dr. Leonie Kutsia stepped down a year ago due to unexpected or unforeseen circumstances in her personal life. And also at management level, about a year ago, we also had on the exco of Kusidra an additional female in that position, who also left on a very short period of notice. So just to then reiterate, Chair, the board at board level, we've had a number of discussions where we have the opportunity to expand on the size of the board, to actually go for very specific profiles in terms of skill set, experience, but also make sure that we address the issue of gender equity. So we take that very seriously, Chair. Thank you.
My follow-up, Chair, and thank you for the response. My follow-up there is, once again, I hear the issue of self-assessment by the board, and I think I would have also attracted in a response by the department that oversee, you know, the board, because in any way that the board will provide a subjective assessment to itself, and it always helps from the point of, you know, giving objectivity also to the shareholder, to give an indication of as what is the role of the department as a shareholder in terms of assessing the board performance.
Chair, if I may come in. When the questionnaire was compiled, after the board approved it, it was forwarded to the minister at that point in time, so that he's aware of the questions that's going to be asked. So once the questionnaire changes, it will be forwarded to the minister for his inputs, so that he can be aware of what had been evaluated.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is a follow-up to what Honorable Ngondro asked, and the response was that in terms of gender representativity, that there were previous females that were there, and upon their departure, they were replaced by males. So, which means there is I hope the MEC is taking note of that because it looks like a regress, because there were females that were there. Instead of expanding on what you have now, I want to understand what would be the, and the other thing is that these females do not stay there, females depart from there. What could be the challenges that lead to women not being able to operate in that space.
Chair, as previously indicated, yes, my predecessor was female, and as indicated, there was a change in that particular person's personal circumstances. The person is traveling a lot between South Africa and the US, and the person felt that because of new personal responsibilities that it would not serve Casida to be absent at key meetings. So I was voted in as chair at the next board meeting after my predecessor resigned. So you know, having served for a short period as vice chairperson, I think I want to reiterate, Chair, that you know, gender equity is a serious issue, you know, at board level, and we should perhaps make the commitment that we will come with a plan following the next reporting cycle to make sure that we have addressed the issue to the satisfaction of the committee.
Yes, yes, yes. Can you please provide us with such a plan? Because indeed, we cannot have a situation whereby you regress progress, and then you get away with it like just easily like that. And then the other issue is that indeed we need to look at the circumstances as to why women cannot hold on to such positions, so that we will be able, as a department, to look at the manner in which how to make sure that the sustainability of progress. We can't have a situation whereby women depart is being celebrated.
Any other members?
Chair, may I ask questions on section D?
C.
Only still C.
C. D is another. You dealt with that way. You said Pet must not have a lot of questions. We're dealing with C now. C, no question on C?
Honorable Watch.
Thank you, Chair. Having looked at the director's profile from page 42 to page 44, I'm actually intrigued to consider perhaps the cathedra and the department can indicate. It seems there's a serious, it may be an uncanny coincidence, maybe colleagues can indicate. But I see in the main, the people that are in the board, you know, their profiles are from the Stellenbosch University. Is it a coincidence? Is it a relationship that Cathedra has with the university, you know, to draw a skill from various institutions in the Stellenbosch board? I think that is a comment I wish, if there is a response from Cathedra, they can provide. Then on page 46 on compliance, Chair, you said some non-compliance were pointed out by the AG and attended to. I would like more information on what are these non-compliance, if they do not lead to the litigation, the issues that have been discussed as part of the litigation, what are those non-compliance, if they could be declared, for us to understand what exactly is that non-compliance that was pointed out by the AG, which I think begs to me again the question that the CEO answered, that indeed we have proper internal controls. How do you have proper controls? How do you have proper internal controls and you still have findings of non-compliance? And my last one, Chair, is that if Cathedra can provide us the full report on the supply chain complaints that actually landed up to the Minister and the Public Protector. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take the first question, Chair, and then I'll ask my colleague, the CEO, to just address the remaining three or four questions that the member had. Chair, just on the first question, there is no deliberate intent to draw individuals to serve as board members from Stellenbosch University. It's pure coincidental. I should maybe just perhaps say something about the process that the nominations committee of the board then sort of follows, Chair, and that is that we start the process and we invite the board to make recommendations on people who would be able to serve. We also invite the minister to make recommendations, and then we do interviews. So the nominations committee of the board is tasked to then interview each of those members and then to decide who will serve on the board and is recommended to the board. So there's no deliberate intent to only look at people who have some association or have studied at Stellenbosch University, Chair. I will ask my colleague, the CEO now, Chair, just to address the three remaining questions. Thank you.
Chairperson, yes. The issue around that the honourable members asking around compliance and exactly what was the non-compliance, it was in respect of supply chain regulations, the application, the practical application thereof. And it's largely as a result of, it's a skill issue in terms of the complexity that the supply chain regulations has become over a period. And I suspect we have not kept up to date with where we are there. And hence we are saying, we have a plan and we are addressing that, and we would like to make sure that we are not going to come back certainly to this committee or the standing committee with similar findings, Chairperson. The AG has detailed the exact nature of the findings in the report, further in the annual report, Chair, and it's really specifically to how we've applied supply chain regulations. Chairperson, then, the Honourable Member raised the issue around supply chain complaints. I think that was quite public at some point. Now, there was one that was quite public, that I recall. It was an aggrieved or disgruntled tenderer that lost out and lodged a complaint at the Minister's office. What then happened, Chairperson, is that the matter was referred by the Minister's office to the Audit Committee, to the board, who then in return referred it to the audit committee to conduct an investigation. The audit committee then concluded that they would require an independent investigation to verify the facts and the circumstances, which we then did through, of course, a service provider where we went through a supply chain process. The independent service provider then came through with an investigation that confirmed that in that particular instance that Cassidra then complied with the relevant supply chain regulations and regulatory requirements. This report, Chairperson, was then also furnished to the Minister's office, who then acknowledged receipt at the time. It was the previous Minister, Schaefer. Then Provincial Treasury, as well as the Forensic Services Department, as well as the Public Protector, then also made inquiries on the very same matter. That same report has also been furnished, and we're quite happy to furnish that same report to this committee as well, Chair. So as we are sitting here, the matter is pretty finalised from that perspective, Chairperson. I think that was all of the questions.
Thank you. I think then if there are no questions on that, we can move to E. Any indications, any appetite on E?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we previously learned that Cassidra had a near fatal loss of information or data during the year under review, and that the Auditor General also took over the auditing of Cassidra. Now, on page 56, we first see quite a significant doubling of the more than doubling of the auditing fees. And I was wondering whether you would be able to give us an indication of how much of that can be ascribed to the fact that additional auditing work had to be done, and how much because the Auditor General of South Africa seems to be more expensive than some of the private auditing firms. Then, Chair, if we look at page 61, property and equipment, I don't know why, but I kind of expected to see some of the farms that Casidra manage also to be reflected in the balance sheet. Now, I realize you are clearly only the managing agent of those farms. I can just ask, should we have seen that those assets in the department's balance sheet there? And I'm referring here to Amalienstein and Baikal and so on. Then, Chair, on page 63, I must tell you, if anybody is under any illusion of where our country's economy is at the moment, if you look in the middle of that page under paragraph 11, other financial assets, at site value, the shares that Casidra holds seem to be all, what is it, blue chip shares, shares in well established recognized companies, and yet within 1 year, 1/3 of the value of those shares. You will see that the year prior, the shares were 6.6 million rand worth, and they fell in 1 year to 4.4 million, and it seems as if you haven't sold any shares in that year. So this is just on the value on the exchange of these shares, and my question then is, are you going to hang on to these shares? Casidra. Thank you, Chair.
CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start at the Honourable Member's question on as far as the data loss issue is concerned. But before I do, let me just clarify what actually happened. So, on the 4th of March of this year, I received a call from our Chief Information Officer, that advised that the server of Casidra has been hacked. And so then unauthorized access was gained, possibly by person or persons inside or outside the country, and then encrypted our server so that no one was able to access it. And so when you tried, a message would pop up to say that you have to deposit X million of cryptocurrency in the following accounts and. And so a process was then set, in place to recover this encrypted information. And so it was, we do backup. We do have a disaster recovery plan, and so that was instituted. But there was some data loss, and the data loss, unfortunately, was selective. And so the only way that we would know is when someone says, well, I can't access A, B, and C. And so that's how we would know. But more significantly, we are at this point quite confident that there has not been any confidential information breach. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, Chair, the selective nature of the data loss was largely on our financials, the capturing of our transactions on some of the project and, of course, on some of our main accounts, which necessitated a recapturing of a lot of that data. And the CFO and his team has done sterling work in terms of being able to get us to a point where the AG was able to almost seamlessly continue with their work. And yes, there was additional work, Chairperson, that they needed to do. However, the issue around... So we are satisfied, and we have made reports to the Office of the Minister as far as the ransomware breach is concerned. So the question of to what extent the higher audit fee relates to the ransomware. Chairperson, I think the AG is best able to answer that question, but what I can say, Chair, is given that 2019 was the first time Casidra has been audited by the AG, our audit fee budget has gone up almost threefold, which has been a point of contestation between ourselves and the AG. And that was before we advised of the data breach and the ransomware. So I would not want to speculate too much in terms of how much, you know, the ransomware has contributed to the audit fee. Chairperson, so that's the data loss and then the audit fee issue. The issue around the farms. Now, the farms is merely just another project for Casidra, like its many other projects. So those won't be combined in the Casidra financial statements. Those would be in the annexures separately. And so you won't see that under PPE on Casidra's balance sheet, but in the annexures to the annual report. I'm sure the CFO will be able to clarify further. And I'll hand over the question to the CFO chair in terms of the movement in the value of the shares.
Chair, thank you. Just to come back to the audit fees, unfortunately, so the Auditor General told us that their approach is much different than those of a private firm. We are still trying to make peace with that. Like the CEO said, for each and every project we manage, we draft a complete set of financials, but we do not consolidate them. So if you go back to the annexure, it's been summarized in the two or three line items where we show, and the only figure that we are currently that we are carrying forward to the Casidra balance sheet is the cash under management. So each time you see a new project, and I'm referring to pages 70, 71 to 73, those are the summary of the projects and on page 71, you will see the names Marlinstein, Analog and Lycra. It's a summary from their financials. Then if I can take you to page 63. About 20 or 24 years ago, when you could not do business with a co-op unless you bought or you bought shares in them. So the very first one is Co-op Agri. It was in those days Vipeco. And I don't have the number in my head now, but say you had to buy 2,000 shares at R1 at the value of R1. The pioneer shares was actually Bukumu, where we bought fodder. And when they, subsequently, Pioneer gave a bonus. They established another company, Quantum. Therefore, you will see that the number of shares in Quantum is similar to that in Pioneer. They gave us bonus shares. Zeder was Capespan. And then Casidra at that stage had a program where we lend money on behalf of the land bank and some other kind of organization as well. But the people we lend it to could not afford any life insurance. So we bought a life policy on the lives of our clients. It was a policy with Sanlam and with Old Mutual. We bought a policy and in the end the policy paid out. But after the demutualization process, we received shares for free in Sanlam and in Old Mutual. And never ever since did we decide to actually sell it. And when you see the 2018 figures, it's already much lower than the 2017 figures. Because in 2017, I think the shares peaked. So it's definitely not a good time to sell them off now. So we're still sitting with them, and we haven't sold them. And the reason why we bought it was pure from a business point of view, where we had to buy shares unless you could not do business with them. And in the two insurance instances, where we bought a policy that paid out and we got the bonus shares in afterwards.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Chair. And where do I start? Two questions, Chair. I start on page 55. That is the balance sheet. And if one look at the total, it is described as the total equity of 2,810,000 rand. That includes a share capital of 25 million, as well as the accumulated surplus. Now, if I look at the heading for that, it's total net assets of 32 million. Now, I'm just a little bit confused and I need clarity around this. Note 15 is sort of a presentation of the share capital, that 25 million rand. And from the previous discussion, we know that that 25 million rand was, over time, an investment made by the Department of Agriculture to the LABOC or wherever it was. You, in your description, you say that the Western Cape government is the owners of this particular company. And that's what you're saying. You said it owns a total sort of equity within the company. Now, why would you list it as part of your total liabilities? One, at the bottom of the balance sheet. And the department listed as an investment. Now, if you do list it as an investment, surely there need to be a sort of an income from that investment. Or because if we look at the equity within a company, then the department is the owner of this particular company. And am I correct in my assessment? That's one thing. And the second question here is on the following page. Trainings are part of total. Trainings, skills, levy, and bursaries. It's 1 million 2000. Now, there's no note to it, you know. I would have liked a sort of explanatory sort of note that would disaggregate that amount, because my question is there a skills levy involved? What has been the skills levy? Was anything paid to the agri-seater or whatever other seater that may be involved? So one has disaggregated that amount, one would have gotten a sense of where these little amounts come from. And then two questions, and then third and last question is the question of the matrix raised by the AG in terms of, and I think my colleague at the back also raised it earlier, the predetermined outcomes. In terms of the indicators and description and program tree, there was lots of questions raised about the inability to verify the whether, you know, the training that was provided accredited facility training, simply just nothing that could they rely upon to indicate that there's training was accredited. And lastly, in terms of page 3 of the auditor's report, program 2 is the number of queries resolved, technical, financial, environmental impact studies, etc., where the reported number is 34, but the audited number where there's reliable evidence that it occurred is 15, which is less than 50% of what is purported to have been sort of resolved. So, does it tell me that there is a complete lack of internal control, and hence the contradiction that we had, colleague raised that we raised in the early discussion with the Internal Audit Committee and the AG's office. That's it, the questions, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Member. I'd like to deal with the third question around the order of predetermined objectives and the issue around the measurability of KPIs and then hand over to the CFO on the issue around the liabilities and explanatory note on the training skills issue and perhaps one of my colleagues on the project side, the query is resolved, the issue there. But just in terms of the audit of performance objectives, Chairperson, we certainly agree with the AG. I think we could perhaps have better applied SMART principles and certainly learnings we will be taking through as management in terms of our current process. So the point is taken on, and hence that's what I mean when I mention that there is a plan in terms of addressing those queries of the AG.
Chair, if we go back to page 55, the structure of this has been determined by GRAP, the standard, saying you need to disclose it in a certain way. Now, if we take a simple transaction, for instance, if you owe me money, in my books, you're a debtor. In your books, you'll say you owe me, so I'm a creditor. Let's go back to this transaction. The department made an investment. In their books, it is an investment. That's why it's on the debit side, for those of you who understand that term. In our books, it is on the credit side of things. This is our shareholding. And that is why it is exactly the same total, 25 million. In our books, we disclose that it's 25 million shares, and we call it fully paid shares. If you go back then to the accumulated surplus, over the majority of the last 25 years, on an annual basis, Cassidra is actually on a break-even position. But now you say, but there's a 7 million surplus. It is, in the past, that those shares we were referring to, we under IFRS, the previous reporting framework, reported that as a change in fair value, and it went to a fair value reserve. When GRAP came in, GRAP said, no, you put everything in one pot and you call it accumulated surplus. I still keep in my office a calculation of the growth in the shares. And I can tell you, at year end, it was very close to 7.8 million, if not exactly 7.8 million. And the value last year was 9.1. So that is actually the rules of the game, how you need to report on things. Yes, the training, the skills and the bursary, those are three different components that was due to a lack of space, due to a lack of not to give too much information and to use the limited lines available, to group them together and to say it is training related. Spend me a moment if I can just come back to the whole issue about we did not comply and it's a breakdown in controls. If you ask me now, are you applying to the rules and legislation? Do you have systems in place? Do you apply to this and this and that? My honest answer is immediately it's yes. That is the backdrop of how we do, we live, and we operate within Cassidra. Then afterwards, it is a bigger shock for me if the Auditor General points out, or anybody else, come and point out a few things. But I like the positive way, if you go to the Auditor General's report, and that is on page 51, the very second paragraph, and I read, in my opinion, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects. Only thereafter they come and say, yes, we found a few things in internal control, in legal, in other things. By saying this, we don't say we're perfect. And I can tell you, if you ask me now, is Cassidra still a going concern? Immediately the answer is yes. If you ask me, are we going to start with legal actions against people? The answer is no. So, but we do try and to on a continuous basis try to improve our systems and our adherence to policies and stuff. Thank you.
Further questions?
No, thank you, Chair. It's adequately answered.
Okay. Any further question from members? On E. Honourable.
Chair. Just two issues, Chair. Page 52. I think it's paragraph 18. Chair, it speaks about the number of queries resolved, technical financial impacts. Page 52. It speaks about the four targets, or the number of targets resolved, which is 34. But we see in the AG's report, and I'm not sure whether it relates to the hacking, and the loss of information. It's actually 50. Chair, because there's some information that could not be provided for the rest, Chair, but we'd like to understand the reasons behind it, Chair. And then, Chair, again on page 52, the food security projects. And last Friday, I've attended one in Maritzburg. And it was a very good program. And the food that was there, the report that we received was donated. But also the food gardens, I think it was a total of 53 families that have benefited. But here, Chair, in this report, it says that Cassidra could not give reliable information in terms of that specific issue. It's either there was no information or the information was not reliable. They don't know who the people is who have benefited from that particular program. And we like to understand, because this is the honorable we need to visit some of these projects. And if we don't have the information, who will we visit, Chair? Who will we visit? We know now in Maritzburg who are the people behind them. They can drive them, I suppose, you know. But in terms of the 18-19 financial year, it seems there's information. Just want to understand.
Chairperson, yes. Thank you very much for the question. I think let me firstly clarify. The data breach was the soft information. So there was no real significant issue as far as this matter is concerned. This matter, Chairperson, relates largely to the physical documentation. And here, by and large, the issue is document management within Cassidra. I think there's definitely a need being identified to be a bit more organized as far as that is concerned. And certainly, given that this is Cassidra's first audit by the AG and its processes being very different to the previous 29 years that we've had, there's considerable work that has really begun to ensure that we are better prepared and better able to make available the records, information and the physical information needs to be made available in a manner and in a format that, that meets with the AG's processes. And so that's where the disagreement, if you like, has been. But we take the point and we take the guidance from the AG that we would be better prepared, Chair. And so the reliability of the information would certainly be improved considerably in the next process, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether the CFO may want to comment further.
Chair, thank you. I did not calculate this, so I don't want to comment on that. But what I also realized, that if the Auditor General finds even one thing that they do not agree with, they don't fiddle around with words. They say your information is unreliable, finish and try. Because they could not rely on the number, irrespective of how you got to your account. Now, I can stand on my head and show them my account if they don't believe me or they don't count at that point in time. It was definitely not, well, I want to assume that it wasn't related to the loss of data that we had or the cyber attack. But it is just at that point in time we could not convince them of what was on file. And then the wording is, sorry, it's unreliable.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on one matter, I understand that the Honourable Member is worried about if they want to visit the project, we don't know where it's processed. The information is there, is available both electronically and in hard copies. But it's unfortunate that then there was this, as the CEO has explained, how the AG works and how we have been operating. But in the case to where the committee feels that they need more information, that information is readily available, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, the gentleman that has responded is not really assisting because we have now received three different responses. The CEO, in his response, has said that there is a problem and they need to deal with traffic problem and it's the keeping of information. That was the response from the CEO. It's not a matter of where information gets lost. That particular one was not a fact, Chair. And I don't want to ask the question, Chair, because it's the first time that Casidra is audited by the AG. Where one wants to believe that that was the trend for all the previous years. And now that the AG is auditing, you need to have good record keeping. I don't know about that particular question,
Chair. I will go with the CEO that there is a need for improvement to make sure that information is kept, Chair, and that there is a record so that we know who are those who have benefited for these particular programs, Chair. So that's the
other one, the 34 versus the 13 of.
General report on page 2, audit of union history.
I come in, Chair?
Yes, CFO.
Chair, ever since Cassidra was incorporated, it was audited annually. Before the PFMA, it was done by private firms and thereafter. On an annual basis, Cassidra got the permission from the Auditor General so that it can be audited at that stage by PwC. Over the last more than 10 years, the management letter that we received was signed off on a Auditor General letterhead. The Auditor General instructed the other audit firms and informed them to a very large extent as to how to audit predetermined objectives and a lot of other things.
Auditor General, but
the first, sorry, Chair?
I'm saying that was standard practice in most instances where the Auditor General will employ other auditors to audit, like in my case, in my previous life, on municipalities. They will get them. So that was standard practice.
So in 2018, we received a letter from the Auditor General saying, the Auditor General opted from now on not to outsource it, but to do it themselves. So therefore, the full audit for the 2018-19 financial year had not been outsourced but done in-house by the Auditor General.
I understand.
Chair, Cassidra is a public entity, so it makes sense.
Chair, for them to be audited by the AG.
Chair, only the 34 versus the 15, and I've heard that the gentleman at the back said that the information is there, Chair. It's just that the AG, it seems the problem is with the AG. I've heard the gentleman said the information is there, Chair. And I take it that the information of the 34.
What is the 34?
The Chair, the 34 is the reported achievements of queries resolved.
Oh, okay. 24 of the 15.
Yes.
15.
Now, the Cassidra is saying is 34. And what I'm getting now is the information is there. The AG is saying that the information is not reliable. Actually, the information that we've received from you is that the achievement is only 15 and not 34. Now we hear now from the gentleman there at the back was saying that, but we do have the information, Chair. And I'm not sure then if the information is there and if the information is the same as the 15, the rest is the same as the 15, what the issue then is, Chair. So I'm not sure whether they really have the information or if the AG got issues.
Anyone can respond? CEO?
Chairperson, as I've mentioned in my presentation, and I think as the CFO has also repeated, we have information that we have provided to the AG, which we believe validates the evidence to support our achievement. The AG has a view that they do not believe that it sufficiently validates what we are saying. And so there's the disagreement. And so it becomes a case of Cassidra needs to then align itself to provide the information, form and content in a manner that supports that which the AG prescribes. That's really what it is, Chair. I'm walking in line.
Thank you, Chair. The
that there was also some interpretation regarding the word accredited and how that information is compiled and how that is validated. And a question I specifically asked, because the word accredited to me in my mind sounds quite obvious. A colleague of mine, Honorable America, highlighted previously that accredited is defined, for example, by the South African Qualifications Act. So you know what is accredited and what is not accredited. And if you want to know whether someone has gotten a course, you go to the university, you go to the FET college, and you ask them, did the particular person get this course in X, Y, and Z, and is it accredited? So for me, it was a bit confusing when the AAG indicated that they could not find reliable information to determine whether or not this accredited course was facilitated or was achieved, and the non-accredited course was facilitated or was achieved. And from what I can understand, it is also to do with the way the indicator is written up. But I just want a bit more clarity and detail around that, because for me it still doesn't make sense that even if the indicator is incorrect, how in a sample you still can't verify such information, given the legislation that is in place for the words credited and non-credited.
Specifically on accreditation.
Yes,
on accreditation.
Chair, question to you under the...
Well, I remember CEO would like to react to that.
Chairperson, yes, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. Chairperson, I understand that it becomes, you know, clarification exactly in terms of what is meant. The exact details, unfortunately, I don't have with me right here. I'm quite happy to make that available to the Honourable Member. But again, you know, it's along a similar theme as to what we sought validates in terms of what we have provided to support. Yes, the AG took a different view, which respectfully we understand they have their view, and so we have to again align. So then there is that process that will happen. But we're quite happy to provide the Honourable Member with the specifics and some of the underlying details.
On accreditation. Honourable Gordon.
Perhaps at some point we really need a discussion with the department early, you know, in the strategy planning process. It baffles me that once we end at this point of reporting, then there is this particular challenge. What is the expected, you know, portfolio of evidence and agreed indicator? And I take it process of AG, as it happens with the department, and less different with the ended, is that there is continuous engagement. And in the continuous engagement, the assumption is to ensure that the requirements of the AG as an auditor can be met. That is why there are those particular conversations. So I think this is one area that perhaps we'll have to get into when we do our reflection. So this issue of target setting, what is the actual indicator, or the reality of the matter, there must be an agreement. So the person who's going to audit will be looking for a particular portfolio of evidence to prove what you have said you have delivered. So I think that as just a management exercise is something that I think we need to spend time on, because it really baffles me once we get at this tail end of the process with the constant engagement that has been there between the entity with the department, with the Auditor General on those particular matters. Let me move the chair and just ask one, if I may be assisted to understand on page 65, there is dividends received at about 216. Can I be educated and upon these dividends, which operations provide? hike the dividends to the entity. I'm just trying to get my head around that. The second one on page 56, Chair. And once again here, just clarify me, I may not necessarily understand the remuneration framework of the entity when I look at the different figures that I hear, especially on 25. If one looks at the different payments and figures that are presented here, you know, indifferently from between a CEO, a COP, which is the Chief Officer Projects, and Chief Officer Technical, if I can just be including the allowances and bonuses, because it just baffles me. I'm not understanding where, for example, you would have others getting bonuses and others not, and then the same who have not received a bonus, for example, the CEO gets company contribution. Maybe if you can just clarify that to me and educate me. That's why I said I may not necessarily have a more, you know, understanding of the remuneration framework of the entity itself. I think mine will end there, Chair.
Okay, thank you. If I may.
Yes, CFO.
Again, back to page 63, where I spoke about investments. When CapAgri pay Casidra or Pioneer or Quantum, we call it a dividend. Those dividends are then recorded, and the total of the dividends received for the year was then the 216,170 for this year compared to the 178 last year. Then if you go to page 66, there's a bit of licorice all sorts, in the sense that the CEO and Ms. Mulweni resigned in the previous financial year. So to show the comparators in this year, because they qualified last year, and this year it is a zero then. And then also, not all the periods were for a full year. You'll see under the basic salary I said that the new CEO, for instance, was only 4 weeks in the employment of Casidra. The previous CEO was in the 2019 year was only for 9 months compared to the previous year where it was for a full year cycle. Again, the Chief Offer Project the same. In this year it was only for 11 months and the previous year it was not in our employment. Those are the explanations as to why some of the figures are zero or not for a full financial year. Bonuses, Chair, they resigned in the previous financial year, so therefore they didn't qualify. They wasn't there when the bonuses in this year, for instance, was paid out.
I think there are no further questions. In the absence of further questions, normally, I see here you are not auditing Casidra on the issue of BEE, or did I miss it? Triple B, EE.
Chair, I'm sorry. I don't have the details right now. I don't want to...
No, it's not here. It's not on the report. Like, it's unlike in other entities or in other departments where you will express an opinion on triple PEE, where you say, for example, paragraph 13G requires all fields of government, public entities and organ of state to report on their compliance with broad-based environment, their autonomous statement. So, yeah, it doesn't exist at all, it's not, or are they exempted, CFO?
Chair, no exemption. On page 42, we record and say that we received the level 6 for the, and it was, the audit was completed in May 2018. The Auditor General is not the auditor who issues the certificate. It can only be an agency or an audit firm that is accredited and allowed to issue you the certificate. So we have been audited for quite a number of years, and we do report on it.
That's fine. I hear that CFO, you reported on it as the entity, but normally all the reports we received from the Auditor General up to date, they were always having that section of PPPE. But when it came to Cassidra, it's not. That's why I'm asking, are they exempted?
I think for this year, we didn't apply to the Auditor of Schedule 3Ds. We didn't apply that particular focus area to Schedule 3Ds for this year. That's why we didn't incorporate them. Okay.
They complied. They complied. We did not. That's why we were finding with the AG and they not. They have a certificate. They have level 6.
Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Given that this information of the fact that Cassidra has complied, how much did you pay for the certificate as Cassidra to have this independent body verify in terms of PPPE?
Yes.
Chair, I don't want to say it's 8,000 rand, but the working in the background is much more. For instance, you cannot say, audit me on procurement. There's a big process. You must have your systems in so as to convince the person on the other side of that as well. That means for each and every person I'm doing with, I must sit with a valid BE certificate of that person. Now say your certificate expired June last year. That means I must submit two certificates. One for April to June and one for July till March. Otherwise they will not take that into account. The first couple of years when Cassidra was audited, there were 7 pillars available for us to be audited on. And you were allowed 4 of them to make a choice, 4 of them. Every year we shied away, although we were compliant on procurement, we shied away and asked them not to audit procurement because the process to be followed is an expensive one. Unfortunately, in Cassidra's case, one of the easiest pillars to be audited on is ownership. We say we are 100% owned by government. I say, sorry, we as a 3D are not allowed to use that as a pillar. Under the old scorecard, Cassidra was a level 2. Under the new scorecard, were the same things done in the same way. We dropped to a level 5, I think. And last year, we even dropped a further level to a level 6. It is a lot of other things that must be in place for you to be audited on those pillars.
Thank you very much. I just wanted at least that information assisted because I think as we, what provoked you, Honorable Khan?
that's exactly right. Someone asked me to say that. I would love to get clarity on the exact amount. How much, like the question was, we don't want to know the background, everything else. How much does it cost to get a certificate? Because it's meant to believe that it is cheaper. You get that? That's what, because we are looking at compliance versus the money. Because seemingly here, there's a look on the value for money more than compliance on law.
Now, I think the answer that was given was 8,000. I take that. It was 8,000 in order to comply. But at least I think we must acknowledge that because in our consistency of raising this issue, we are able to learn more about this. That's why I will say I will find it very difficult next year and about this time when we sit with department saying that they cannot comply, because it's something that we are raising consistently, and as we're raising it, more and more information comes out, and there are more and more things that we are actually learning. We are raising, we are concerned about it because we are serious about it. Because we want this country to transform. We want this country to comply, the departments to comply with the laws of the country. And one of those laws is EEE. That's why the Auditor General made it one of their issues to raise. But then having said that, I think if there are no further questions, are there any members of the public that would like to ask questions? I think we are all together here. It looks like there is no questions. And then in the absence of that, then let me make use of the opportunity to thank you, ladies and gentlemen.